Okay, welcome back, everybody. Lovely to see you all here. So, as I said, we're going to start from towards the top of the bottom, excuse me, of 10b of Yud Amud Bet. I think, yeah, as I said, we got just over the page onto Yud Aleph. But just to sort of get our head back in the game, so we've begun to talk about, so in the middle of Yud Amud Bet, we're not going to go right from there, but right in the middle from the two dots, start again in terms of the repayment. So now we're talking about a classic case of damages. Again, we'll talk about I think the classic cases, ox on ox. My ox, let's say for simplicity, kills your ox, and now I have to pay you back for the damage that my ox has done. So the Torah says one of the things that you have to one of the factors that we work into the repayment is that the carcass, right, the hamis yihyelo, the carcass of the animal goes, as it were, back to the nizak, to the damaged party, and therefore the payment is only over and above the value of that carcass. So my ox was worth £500 for argument's sake. Now that it's a carcass, it's worth £100. I only have to pay back £400 rather than the full £500. The Gemara brings three different sources for that. Okay, we went through each of the verses to bring three different sources for that. One from this source itself, regular, again, this is in all sorts of cases, but one from the sort of classic, as we say, Nizke Momon, right, where my property damages something, one from Nizke Odom, I believe, one where I myself damage something, and one from Shomrim, which is where you're sort of a guardian of something rather than actually, it's not that you damaged something, but it got damaged while it was in your care, while you were supposed to be looking after it. So those are the three different types of sources that we brought from, and maybe we'll pick up from there, where the Gemara sort of begins to, we'll just sort of run through briefly, where the Gemara basically talks about why do we need three different sources, right? Because they're not enough just to have one source. Do we really need to have each of these three different sources? So that's about, I would say, about 8 lines, 10 lines from the end. Third word on the line from the word Utsricha, I think. Is that the middle? Yeah, I think that's, yeah. So let's go from there. The Ikaz of Rachmana Maket Behema, Yeshalmena, Mishum de lo shchicha, right? Okay, it's unusual to have a, as we've said in the past, right? The Torah establishes that it's unusual that an animal should choose to kill another animal. And therefore, that's why we have the whole issue of shoratam, which we haven't really got to, right? This ox, which has not gored more than three times, only pays half damages, which the Gemara will discuss in more detail later on. But again, that's based on the fact that it's unexpected. It's something which we're not, which we don't think is usual, and with intentional damage. And so the Gemara says, yeah, okay, so that's why that verse is needed. De lo shchicha, aval treifa de shchicha, we might have thought, right, the one we're talking about, Torefi Toref, which is a different source. Torefi Toref, I think, is talking about where you yourself caused the damage, I believe. So then, that's more common, and therefore, Emo Lo, we might have thought, no, that the same would not apply. Therefore, Tzricha. Therefore, we need the extra verse. V'yashmin on Trefa Mishum Dimimela. That's talking about the Shomer. Right, Torah is talking about where you're looking after it, and it's damaged while you're looking after it, or not, as the case may be. Aval treifa d'shchicha emalo. Right, so treifa v'yashmin on treifa. If we only had the source of a treifa, i.e., where you're the shomer, you're the guardian, mishum d'memela. You might have thought that was specifically because it sort of happens on its own, as it were. You're not doing aval makeh behema. Where it's much more active, and it's interesting that the Torah refers to your property damage, something is considered to be active damage rather than damage that's happening. So just again, that's the way the Gemara frames it. Emalo, again, we might have thought that would be different, and therefore we need sources to clarify that both actually have this application of the principle that the carcass is included within the repayment. And if we would have only had these two, one because it's it's more of a normal case in one because it's passive. Avol v'hamesi, lo, right? Maybe that would dishchicha ubi yodaim emalo. Maybe we don't need this third verse. Ve'yashminon hames yehielo. If you would have just had the hamesi yelo, right? If you just would have had that third one, mishum demamona komadit. So there it's talking about where your property is doing the damage. Aval hocha de begufo mazik, where you yourself are causing the damage, then you might have made that distinction. And again, interesting that included within that, when we're talking about you yourself doing the damage, that we're including in that you being a guardian. So you being a guardian, something, damage occurring to this animal or object which you're supposed to be looking after is considered almost, you doing the damage, as it were. That's, again, an interesting side point that this Gemara seems to be throwing up. The Begufa Mazik, Eimalo, Tzricha, and therefore we really end up with all three of these verses, each one with, as we said, with their own little subtlety. But from here, we get the sense that in all sorts of cases, then Mizielo, the carcass would be included in the repayment. Okay. Omar Le Rav Kahana Le Rav. So he asked the following question. Ella Taima de Kosav Rachmana Vamesielo, right, seems to be that the reason why the carcass is included in the repayment, i.e. as the damager, I can now say I'm only paying back £400 because £100 is coming from the carcass itself. The reason for that seems to be because we have a verse, right? Because we have a source for it from the Torah. The implication being that if that wasn't the case, right, if there wouldn't have been this source, then a nevela the mazik havia, then the carcass would have belonged to the mazik, to the damager. So hashta e is le lididek hamatrefa. So Rav Kahana's question is, yeah, okay, great. So now it belongs to him. But even if he would have had hamatrefas, even if he would have had many carcasses, yohivle, in theory, he could have paid with those carcasses. So it doesn't really make much of a difference, right? This doesn't seems to not really add up to anything, because the bottom line is, even whether it belongs to the nizak, the damaged party, or it belongs to the mazik, he can still use that as part of the repayment, right? Even if it's his, he can include that in the repayment. Why? The Omar Mar, because we have a principle which we've come across before, Yoshiv Lerabos Shove Kesev, that you don't need to pay back just in cash, you can pay back in equivalent value, right? Some objects, but I feel a subin. We said even that sort of barley type grain, right? The very low, even something which is, not particularly valuable, but if you get enough of it together, then that you can make the repayments using that, using those that value, right? Not money itself. So therefore, me boy, right? Is it really necessary to have this verse to tell us that the damaged party gets the So the Gemara responds, lo nitzracha ela lapachas nevela, right? Well, the reason why we have this verse is to clarify that actually when the nevela loses, or if the nevela loses value, then that loss in value is going to be subsumed, unfortunately, by the damaged party, because it belongs to the damaged party from that moment. What is that moment? What is that moment? So Rashi says it is El Pachas Novela. He says, the very, very last line on the page, Meshalem Le Mazik Mashahan Nezik Havi Yester Al Hadomim. The Mazik, the requirement is for the damager to pay back the damages over and above whatever was shahoisa novela, the value of the novela shove, shahoisa novela shove, whatever the carcass was worth, b'sha'at mita, right? B'sha'at mita, and in the moment of death, i.e. the moment it was killed. So it sounds like that's the moment where it is now owned by the nizak. So that's quite other rishonim disagree and say that's harsh, right? That's too far back. because the Nizak, the damaged party, doesn't know anything about it necessarily in that case. And it's only, some say, from the moment where they find out, in a sense, you know, from the moment where they are then able to sell it on. If you were able to sell on the carcass, then you're able to sell it on. You own it from that moment. If, let's say, the court case takes a few months and the value goes down after that, so then, yes, you're absorbing that loss, but you could get rid of it before then. So you can get rid of it at any point during that point. Right.
So why is that not the point of assessing how much damage the top up has to be paid by the crown judge?
Well, everything's worth what someone is willing to pay for it, but the point, but you can still make a general assessment as to what it should be worth. I mean, we do that all the time. No? As to we give a sort of an objective
an absolute realizable value.
Yeah. But again, but you may get a particularly high price. Meaning, you say about anything, you know, like about leave animals aside, but you know, with cars nowadays, okay. So the insurance will give a value of that car, right? Whether you are able to sell it for more or sell it for less, you can do that. But they will always give you their estimated value of that vehicle. Right, so it's the same thing over here. There's the estimated value. Yes, you technically could find a buyer who will pay more or not, but the estimated value is going to be the estimated value, and the estimated value will be in that moment. And that's easier. I mean, I guess you can do it nowadays, but in those days, you know, that was based on market. You know, there were markets and market prices, and I guess you also have that now. We have online markets in a sense. So that's where you figure out the approximate value.
The note in here says the halacha says it's from the time the owner found out about it.
That's what other rishonim say, but we just saw that Rashi actually didn't say that. So it's interesting. Does it have a source for that? Doesn't say it. Like a Shulchan Aruch.
Rosh.
Oh, okay, yeah. So that's the Rosh. So the Rosh is disagreeing with Rashi. I wonder what. I wonder if it's in. I wonder which opinion the Shulchan Aruch follows. And that's the Rambam. It doesn't agree. There you go. That would be the Rambam. Okay, so as I said, whichever the time is, everybody's agreeing that there is a time lapse from when this ownership begins to in a sense the time when there could be a time lapse from when the ownership begins until the Nizak, the damaged party, is actually paid back, and therefore in theory it could go up in value, but I imagine carcasses don't really go up in value, so. Yeah, but I guess in something else, you know, it could be something else. I don't know if you broke someone's iPhone and the materials in it. I don't know, you know, could in theory go up in value, and at that point, you'll gain more than you would have otherwise. Okay. So that's the Gemara's answer. The Gemara's answer is that we need the source because there's going to be a difference in time, and therefore the ownership will be from that moment. So lema pachas nevela, the Gemara suggests or wants to clarify, maybe this idea of pachas nevela is actually tanoi here, to debate amongst the tanoim. Okay, not everybody necessarily agrees to that principle, and we're going to try and prove that from a brisa. Brisa being piece right to tanaitic literature, which was not included in the Mishnah. The Tanya im tarof yitaref yevihu eid. That's a verse from the Torah. That's in, I'm assuming it's in Mishpatim. The Mishpatim, Shmos 22, chapter 22. Tarif, Yevayehu aid. You have to bring an aid. What exactly does an aid mean? So one opinion says Yovi aidim, right? You should bring witnesses, i.e., if the animal was damaged, you know, was torn apart, literally, right? So then you have to bring aidim. You have to bring witnesses, shenitrafa ba'ones. This is talking about where you are the guardian, you're looking after something. Let's say we'll call it an unpaid guardian, even a paid guardian would still be exempt in cases of what's called ones, right, where it's not your fault. So in a case of ones, you have to bring witnesses in Torah. If it sort of, you know, got damaged outside of your control, then it's struck by lightning, you know, let's say, for example, while you're looking after this cow, then you have to bring witnesses to that effect, that it was damaged in onus potter, and then you'll be exempt. Abba Shaul says, Yavi Iduda, you have to bring the carcass, right? You don't bring the witnesses, you bring the carcass. Lebeistin, my love, Bahaka. So it's interesting, he says you bring the carcass, because I think even if you're bringing the carcass, you still have to, I think you'd still, people would still agree that you would, you don't need to literally, that you know, that even, even the carcass, you would still just have to bring people who, in a sense, can testify to what the carcass looked like. But anyway, so I'm not sure. So the Gemara, well, either way, the Gemara wants to use this as the same debate or a debate based on what we just said, i.e., my love, this is now the second to third line, my love, Bahar Komifligi, is this not the point, the very point that they are debating? Demar Savar, one opinion is trying to claim, Pachas Nevela de Nizak, that the lowering in the value of the carcass goes, in a sense, is absorbed by the damaged party, the Nizak. Of Umar Sovar, the Mazik have it. And the other one says no. It says that difference is absorbed by the Mazik, by the damager. Why is that the case? I think the point is that one, in a sense, seems to be claiming that you're holding on to the carcass. Right, the point is, I see, okay, so according to the suggestion is that according to the second opinion, the reason why you're bringing the carcass into court, or at least witnesses to the state of the carcass into the court, is not just to prove the onus requirement, not just to prove the fact that you are exempt because it wasn't your fault, but also to figure out the value of that carcass, right? Whereas according to the first opinion, it doesn't make a difference, right? Yavi Adim means you bring witnesses. You bring witnesses to the fact that you did not, you're not responsible for the damage. And then, okay, whatever the carcass is worth, the carcass is worth. It doesn't make any difference. You still have to pay. You still have to pay everything. And therefore, it sounds like according to the first opinion, the mazik, the damager, is the one who's going to absorb that loss, whereas according to the second opinion, the nizak is the one who's going to absorb that loss. So look, the Gemara responds, no, that's not necessarily the case. The kuleyama, the nizak, v'hocha b'torach nevela kamifligei, right? The debate over here is talking about the torach nevela, who has to actually, you know, bother to take care of it, in a sense, right? Who's the one who actually has to deal practically with it, i.e. everybody agrees that the Nizak actually owns the carcass, but maybe the Mazik is the one who's actually responsible to sort it out, to bring it to Beis Din, to actually, you know, get the valuation done and all those sorts of things. Okay, Vahatanya. So this is really, as we said, just recapping in a sense, or hopefully re-clarifying. Vahatanya, don't we have another Braisa, which seems to teach differently to how we just said? Acherim omrim minayin sh'al ba'al habar laha'alos sher mibaro. From where do we know, where is the source, that the ba'al habar, the person who actually dug the pit, i.e. the damager, right, in this case, talking about obviously a case where you dug a pit and that's what caused the damage, an animal fell in it, that you are responsible, laha'alos sher mibaro, to take the ox, to take the carcass out of your pit. Talmud lomar, kesef yoshiv liba'olav. It sounds like you return the money right? So we're actually sort of dividing the verse up, really, because it's v'hameis yelo. But either way, we're sort of dividing the verse up. Kesev yoshiv liba olav v'hameis. You return not only the money, but you return the carcass as well, the mace, right? The actual nevela. You're going to have to return to the owner as well. So omer le'abay l'rova. High Torah Nevela, right? When we talk about this Torah Nevela, right? This the actual sort of schlepping of everything. Hey Chidomi, how exactly does this manifest? Well, what exactly does this mean? Ilemo Dibabira Shavya Zuza, Va'aguda Shavya Arba. If we're talking about a case where in the town it's going to be worth one Zuz, going to be worth a certain amount, Va'aguda Shavya Arba, and yet in the farms around it's going to be worth a bit more, right? It's going to be worth four. Ki Torach Bidinafshe Torach. In a sense, when you are the one who is moving it around, then you're doing it for yourself, right? You're the one who's going to, in a sense, get the extra or not, or not get the extra, as the case may be. So Amalei lo tricha. Rather, that's not just about kachas nevela. That's not about the value going up and down. That's talking about if you want to sort of move to a different location and get more for this, then that's your prerogative. So say no. We're talking about a case lo tricha. We're talking about a case where actually it has the same value even in different places, right? Even in different places it doesn't make a difference. The animal is worth the same in London as it is in any other place, right? The age of the animal will make a difference, but I don't think that will change based on location. Here we're talking about whether it changes based on location.
No, I'm not talking about whether a young
dog. I mean, that's a market thing in a sense that will change depending on. I'm not an ox expert, but I'm guessing the young ox will be worth more than the older one. But as I say, right, that's like a bigger one will be worth more than a smaller one, all those sorts of things. That's part of the valuation.
Whether it's a young ox or old ox, the distinction is between the value of the young or old ox at the bottom of the pit and the value of the ox at the top of the pit.
Right. Oh, and in the and again, the difference between the town and, let's say, outside of the town, right? And those sorts of things. So and the point is, if you want to take it elsewhere, then you could take it elsewhere, right? You could move it to another location. So lo tzricha to bebira shavi zuz. We're dealing with a case where in the city it's worth one zuz, but the nami shavi zuz, it's got the exact same value. It doesn't make a difference where you're going to sell it. It's going to be the same thing. What do you mean? Is there such a thing, right? Surely everything sort of fluctuates depending on where you're going. It's never exactly the same. So we say, yeah, in the Harmri Inshi, yes, we do, it does happen. It does happen, the Harmri Inshi, people do say, Kashur is an interesting source, right? The Gemara is sort of taking it almost from hearsay. Kashura b'masa b'zuza, Kashura b'davra b'zuza, right? The ox is worth a zuz in the town, and it's worth a zuz in the country, in the farmland as well, in the field. So that's, as we said, going to be worth the same sort of thing. And again, I sort of translate it nowadays, I guess, into cars and things like that. I'm assuming cars are relatively similar prices. I don't know if anyone tried to buy a car in different cities. Do they go? They're pretty similar prices. Not cheaper elsewhere.
Cheaper in Scotland.
Oh, yes, yes. I do know there's a fellow who drives his, mad fellow, drives his cars down from Scotland. Yes. Although I'm told, I don't know if this is true actually, I'm told that now with ULEZ that diesel cars are now going to be cheaper in London than anywhere else, because no one wants to buy them in London anymore. So, but I don't know. Okay, so I guess it goes in different ways. Okay, Omar Shmuel, so I think this is a new thing, but again, linked, right? We're now dealing with this same idea of valuing the carcass as part of the repayment. So up until now, we've been talking about damages, right? We've been talking about damages, and that's whether the, as the Gemara phrased it, whether the damage was active or whether the damage was passive, right? Whether it's caused by my property or me, or me simply looking after something and it being damaged under my care, all those sorts of things. But now Shmuel is going to introduce a new case of repayment, which he says is slightly different. So Omar Shmuel says as follows. Ein shamin lo leganav velo legazlan ella lenizikin or lenizokin. Right, we don't do this valuation for a ganav or a gazlan for different types of theft. Rather, we're only talking about in a case of nizikin of damages, as we've outlined earlier. Why? Va'ani omer af l'sho. So before we get onto the why, he says that. He says, Vaniyoma afla shoel. This even applies to a shoel, to a borrower. Which one even applies to a borrower? right? This was the meaning. He's saying you don't value for for theft, and you do value for damages, and the same applies for a show up, for borrowing. The same as which one? The same as not the same as not doing the valuation, or the same as yes doing the valuation? So that's what the Gemara wants to know. Va'aba modeli, and he says, and Abba agrees with me. Rav, Abba reference to Rav. Rashi clarifies. Rav agrees with me. Iboy lehu, the Gemara wants to know. Hachi ka'omar af l'shoel. When you said af l'shoel, this even applies to the borrower. Af l'shoel shomin. Va'aba modeli. Odil mehechi hachi ka'omar va'ani omar af l'shoel ein shomin va'aba modeli. Right? You could either be saying that with a borrower, so too, you do have the valuation, i.e. the carcass goes to the damaged party. Or we're saying, no, just like Ganov and Gazlan, just like the theft case, Ein Shomin, you don't do the valuation, and Abba Modeli and Rav agrees with me on that. So everybody seems to agree, but we're not sure what they agree on. Toshma, the Hahu Gavra. So we tried to bring a proof. The Hahu Gavra, the Shoil Narga Mechavre. So the person who borrowed a narga, a knife, I think, is that right? Or an axe, rather, right? An axe. Okay, very good. So he borrowed an axe from his friend, Tavro, and broke it, right? Also, lekamei de Rav, he came in front of Rav. Omar le, Rav said to him, Zil shlim le narga ma'alya. Give him back a new axe, a brand new axe, right? A proper brand new axe. Shema mina. Ein shomit, right? We see from here that he is not included. Meaning you still have the pieces of the old axe, right? The axe was there. You've got the pieces. So the fact that you have to now pay back a new axe means that you're not including that for argument's sake. A new axe costs £50, right? The pieces you could technically, right? You can get rid of them, get £5, right? So the fact that he doesn't say give him back £45, he says to him buy him a new axe, means that we're not including the pieces of the axe in this, and therefore a shoel, a borrower, seems to be included in the bracket of ein shomin, of not actually getting the object, right? This is not a carcass, right? Here we're dealing with pieces of an object, but the principle is the same principle, okay? A Ganov does, not a Gazlan. Yeah.
But if you borrow, why isn't it, if you're putting in the same bracket, that access to value, why doesn't you have to say extra damage in the product?
No, there's two different, meaning a thief will have lots of, in each case there will be different elements. So here we're dealing with the double payment is, as I say, is a sort of a unique or almost unique application to that type of theft, right? But it also has other elements, right? So we're saying this is a slightly different point over here, where we're saying whatever the value is that you're going to have to pay back, right? Let's say you're going to have to pay back £300, £400. You know, you stole something worth £500. Now you've got to pay back £1,000. So we know that the total bill is £1,000. The question is, within that bill, are we going to minus off the value of the actual item that was stolen? So the answer is no, right? The Gemara is saying with regards to theft, very clear not. Now this actually is a very interesting issue. Has quite a lot of ramifications in halacha. The idea of not sure the Gemara talks about, so the Gemara doesn't really get into it, but really there's a very interesting why exactly that is, right? What you see is, and there's quite a number of Gemaras which seem to talk about this or based on this principle, but when a person steals something, there are what are called kinyane gazela, right? You sort of make certain acquisitions in doing that, right? For better and for worse, the ownership to an extent transfers to you. Now that doesn't mean the ownership transfers to you and you can do whatever you want with it, right? You're still liable to pay back for the theft. And in the case of a gun, you're liable to pay back double for the theft, right? You do have to, but as we see over here, the ownership, you do actually have a certain amount of ownership over that. And certainly in this case, right, that's why we're saying over here that the value is just, you know, the value of the pieces or whatever's broken don't make any difference. Or, you still have a separate, interestingly, you still have a separate requirement to actually give back the object intact if you can. So although, as we said, it doesn't count in Shaman, we don't include that in the value. I mean, obviously we include in the value if you do that. There is a separate mitzvah for a gazlan. I steal somebody's phone, let's say, for example, right? So I steal someone's phone. So I'm liable to pay back, I don't know what an iPhone's worth now, £1,000, something ridiculous, right? Whatever they cost now. So you're liable to pay £1,000, right? If you have cash, then maybe that's how you have to pay. But if you have the phone, right, then there's a special mitzvah, not a mitzvah you go out of your way to do, but there is a special thing that you actually should give back the object itself, right? That's ideal. Way to sort of make the reparation. So, it's not referring to it, meaning it's not, I don't think it's limited. It's as I said, it's an acquisition, and in that sense, it has quite a number of different ramifications. One of the ones that springs to mind for me is actually Gemara in Sukkah talks about it, where the Gemara talks about a lulav hagazel, right? If you use a stolen lulav, why are you not allowed to do that? And the Gemara talks about what's called a mitzvah haba'a ba'avira, right? Then in a sense, it's a mitzvah which is coming from you doing something wrong, but the implication of that Gemara, and actually the Gemara sort of talks about sort of more complicated ramifications of it, but the implication is that without that principle, you own it, right? Usually you can't borrow a lulav, you have to own the lulav. Now you can get it from a friend and acquire it, but in a sense what you see from there is that actually the theft itself would be enough to acquire it. From an ownership standpoint, that's enough. But it's just because of this concept of mitzvah ba'avira that it doesn't work. And the Gemara does talk about, let's say you're buying your lulav again, and hopefully nowadays, you know, the sellers are pretty good. But, you know, once upon a time, you used to go to someone's field, and apparently there were sort of dodgy fellows, sort of, you know, selling a lulav on the side of the road. You're not sure if it was really his or not. Yeah, maybe he's a bit of a thief. So if it's not his, then again, then you're using a stolen lulav. So how exactly you get around that sort of issue? The Gemara talks about different ways you can do that. That if it's sort of two steps removed, if you're not sure, if you think you can sort of, in a sense, you can have the kinyan of gezel in what as one thing, and you can make a different type of acquisition in addition to that. That's a Gemara in Sukkah which discusses that. But as I said, it has quite a number of different ramifications. The fact that you acquire something as a gun of an agazlan. What we see over here from a shoel, right, from the borrower, is a similar thing, right? That seems to be, I don't think this is a comment on the, there's nothing wrong with borrowing something from a friend, but from this Gemara we see that actually the shoel is falling into that same category, that there is an acquisition of sorts potentially in doing that, and maybe that manifests certainly with the shoel when I'm talking about borrowing, that manifests in potentially in the very high level of responsibility that you have. As a shoel, you have a very, very high level responsibility. You're liable even in the case of onus, right? Even in a case where it's not really your fault, you would still actually be liable to pay back if you're borrowing for free. If you're renting something, then that's different. But if you're borrowing something for free, then you do have a very, very high level of responsibility to pay the person back. And again, this sort of comes back to what we talked about in the past with with regards to Nezek. I think we talked about this right at the beginning, the idea of whether you're, in a sense, when we're talking about damages payments, are we saying that you are paying back for the damage that was done, or are you, in a sense, trying to put the person back on the equal footing that they were before, right? And they can have subtle differences. Well, I mean, we actually have a case at the moment which I haven't resolved. Not for me to resolve, but someone damaged the floor. Right, someone damaged someone's floor, parquet floor, and the question is, right, so in order to now deal with that damage, you have to redo the whole floor. Right, so the question is, do they have to pay back for the whole floor? Do they have to pay back in a sense? I don't know how you determine, right, what that section would be worth, right? Or they just have to pay back for that section. And it's just unfortunate that in a sense, in order to, you can't sand down part of the floor, you have to sand down the whole floor and restart. So I don't know. As I said, maybe that's a similar, it's not really the same as this application, but might go back to that same question of whether you have to put the person on the equal footing. They had a nice floor beforehand, you have to make sure that they have a nice floor now. Or we say, no, you've done some damage, so all you have to do is pay back for the damage that you did. Okay. All right, so we are now Shmami not in Shamin. Okay, Adaraba. I think we're up to Adaraba. Is that right? Yeah, so first we tried to prove Shmami not in Shamin. So we see from here, Ain Shamin, that actually the Shoel is similar in this sense to the Ganav and the Gazlan, to the theft, and therefore you do not include it in the you do not include the value of the broken axe in the repayment. Adaraba, so the Gemara says, no, quite the opposite, right? You have to turn this around. Mid Omri Le Rav Kahana V'Rav Asi Le Rav, the fact that they said this to Rav, Dino Hochi V'Shosik Shema Mino Shomin, right? So they in a sense are, they're questioning it, right? Mid Omri Le Rav Kahana V'Rav Asi Le Rav, right? They're almost saying it in a surprised tone, right? That's what you would do, right? And Rav didn't respond, right? What do you mean? They say, Zil Shlimle Nargam Alia, right? Are you really going to give him back a brand new act? Right? Sounds like we're sort of changing tone of voice. And therefore, the point is that, in fact, the opposite, that the borrower would be somebody who gets the, who doesn't acquire the pieces, and therefore the pieces of that would go into the value of paying back the person. All right. Itmar. Now about 10 lines from the end of, or maybe a bit more, yeah, 10-12 lines from the end of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Itmar. Omar Ula, Omar Rabbi Lazar, Shomin Leganov V'Gazlan. So he says, no, you do, right? So now we have a different presentation over here that they disagree with Shmuel and with Rav, right? Because we said Shmuel and Rav agree. They disagree that if you're a Ganav and a Gazlan, then you do take into account the value of the broken object or the damaged animal, whatever it might be. Rapapi Omar Ein Shomin V'Hilchasa Ein Shomin Lo Leganav V'Lo Legazlan Avol L'Shoel Shomin Kidder of Kahana V'Rav Asi. So that's how the Gemara concludes. The halacha is that that's what you do. That you do not take into account the value for the Ganav and the Gazlan, i.e. they have to pay back irrelevant, you know, regardless of whatever the pieces are worth. Whereas for a Shoel you do, and for Nazikin, as we saw earlier, you also include the value, right? You include the value of the carcass, you include the value of the damaged object, or whatever it might be. Okay. Questions, comments, anything else? We're going to move on to something very, very different now. Okay. This is a very Gemara trick that I think, unless I'm mistaken, the only connection between this Gemara and the next one is the fact that it's both statements of Ula in the name of Rabbi Lazar. So because we had one statement of Omar Ula, Omar Rabbi Lazar, on line 12 from the end or whatever it is, then now we're starting another one, line 8 from the end or around that. Okay, for Omar Ula, Omar Rabbi Lazar, Shilya Shayotasa Miktasa Biyom Rishon, U Miktasa Biyom Sheni, Monin La Min Harishon. So a Shilya is a sack, amniotic sack, right? like a fetus, but again, don't know the status of the fetus inside of that sack. So it comes out shiyotzosa mitzosa biyom rishon or mitzosa biyom sheni. It was part of it came out on day one and part of it came out on day two. Doesn't mean literally, you know, from one day to the next, but we're talking about transferring from one day to the next. We're talking about the late afternoon into the nighttime of the second day. So the day, new day begins in the evening. Okay, whether it's a sunset or nightfall, bit of doubt over there. But let's just say, so it begins to come out in the late afternoon and it fully comes out once it's nighttime already. So which is the night on which is the day rather on which we consider this this animal to have been born, or this, I think it's going to be dealing with a fetus, sort of a stillbirth, unless I'm mistaken. So shilya shayot samit tosu biyom rishon, tosu biyom hasheni. Part comes out on day one, part comes out on day two. Monin lo min horishon. We're talking about a case where you count it from the first. You count it from the first day. Rashi clarifies that this is referring to a. This is referring to a stillbirth, unless I'm mistaken, and we're dealing with the case of the laws of Tumah and Tahara, right? Of purity and impurity. So as a bit of background, when a woman gives birth, so that there's different types of purity. So there's purity, impurity, and purity with regards to nida. And then that's in terms of marital relations and things like that. But going back in time, okay, that's in a sense more simple application nowadays. Going back in time, it had many, many more ramifications with regards to the types of things, with regards to sort of going to the temple and what you could eat and all sorts of things like that. So for instance, the wife of a Kohen, right, you can only eat truma. This applies to, again, Mr. Cohen or Mrs. Cohen, whoever it is, but Mrs. Cohen is the one who's given birth. But any Cohen, Mr. or Mrs., cannot eat or can only eat truma when they are in a state of purity. So now we're dealing with when a woman gives birth, and that status of impurity. At what point does that begin? So it comes out a little bit, as we said, a little bit on the first day, a little bit on the second day. So the Gemara says over here, monin lamin arishim, accounting from day one, from the earlier time. Omale Rava. That's again, this is a statement of Ula in the name of Rabbi Elazar. Omale Rava, or Rava responds, Ma da'atcha. What's the reason? Right? Well, what exactly are you why do you establish that from day one? Right? If it's Lechumra, right, if we're saying that just to be machmir, just to try and be a little bit more stringent, we're saying even from the earlier time, i.e. therefore if she, whatever she had touched or sat on, etc., at that time would, this is again going back to temple times, would carry that status of impurity. So does that mean, if we're talking about just as I said, just as a stringency, because we're not sure, so therefore we go back in time, so chumra da'asi lide kulahu. Right, that's stringency in one sense, but then you become lenient on the other side. Why? The komata harisle may rishon, because then the purity also starts. I.e., we're talking about a case. Let's say, for argument's sake, we're dealing with a case where it's 7 days of impurity. So if you're starting from day one, then the 7 days is going to end a day earlier. Right? If we're talking about a Tuesday, then we're talking about the following Tuesday is going to be okay. So it's all very well to call it a chumrah, to say we're talking about being strict over here, but you're being strict on one end, but it means you're going to be lenient on the other. So Ella Omer Rava, so Rava rather responds, Lochush Choshesheshes. We're talking about that you actually do take the stringencies of both, but because we're not sure, you end up actually covering both sides. And therefore, Lochush Choshesheshes, Mimno, Lo Mimni, Ella Lasheni. Right? So in terms of the... in terms of the actual counting, right? So in terms of going back in time, we take that stringency to assume that it's from the first day. But in terms of counting forward, we take the stringency, lo mimna ela lasheni, you only start counting from the second day, and therefore going forward, it's going to last that extra day as well. My kamash malon, right? Well, what is the implication of this? What exactly are we, you know, teaching from here? De ein miktas shilya below vlat, right? We're saying that when you have, and this is again a principle which has many halachic ramifications, ein miktas shilya below vlat, when you have a little bit of the amniotic sac that comes out, so that means that you're going to, we assume that there is a fetus in it, right? We assume that there is at least part of the fetus in there, and therefore you're going to carry the status of impurity from that moment. Now, ein mikdas shilya below vlad is quite significant. I mean, it's still significant nowadays in the sense that sometimes you don't know, right? Sometimes you can't see. We're talking about, let's say, very, very early or a relatively early miscarriage, right? Unfortunately. So it's dealing with a very early miscarriage. So the point is that even if you have a small part, even if you can't tell whether there's a fetus in there or there's not a fetus in there, so we're always going to assume, as we say, this is the halachic principle, ein miktas shilya below vlad, there's going to be, there is a fetus in there. There was a potential child in there, or more than potential, a beginning of a fetus in there. And therefore, that's going to carry with it that same status. Okay, that same status, as we said, is giving birth to that. Tanina. Okay, so now we're going to bring a Mishnah, and as we said, this has got literally nothing to do with what we said earlier. So we have this day one, day two. We're going to take the stringencies of both, and the Gemara is clarifying that the principle we're going from that this is based on is the principle that once part of this amniotic sac is coming out, even though we don't know whether there is a fetus in there or not, we don't know whether the part of the fetus is in that amniotic sac or not, you can't really tell, but we're going to assume that there is, and therefore day one is going to be considered to be day one going backwards, and day two is going to be considered the beginning in terms of going forward. Panino. Mishnah says as follows, Shilyo Shayota Samiktosa Asura Ba'achila. So when you have an amniotic sac that comes out just a little bit, asura ba'achila, we're talking about this is a very different case. Okay, we're now talking about unless I'm mistaken, a ben perkua. Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. But okay, so yeah. So we're talking about a ben pakua. So I think of, does anyone say that, clarify that? Yeah, shilya shel behema. So Rashi says, yeah, we're talking about an animal now. So again, different case. Different case, but obviously in terms of the birth, right, the elements of the birth, we're going to sort of compare elements of the birth. Shilya shiyotza miktosa, the case of an animal which is giving birth, even a part of the amniotic sac comes out, asura ba'achil, that animal is going to be forbidden to eat. Simon vlad be'isha, simon vlad be'behema. So in that sense, we're applying this same principle. So just as we're not sure, we're going to assume that there is a fetus in there with regards to a woman giving birth, so we're going to assume that there's a fetus in that amniotic sac with regards to an animal giving birth. So yeah, I'm pretty sure this is applying the principle as follows. Okay, so a little bit of background. So when an animal is shechted, right, in order to eat an animal, okay, a kosher animal, we obviously know that we need to do shechita. When the animal is shechted, so everything within that animal is considered to be, all the permitted parts of that animal are considered to be permitted, okay? Yes, there's what's called chelev, certain types of fats which are forbidden, but otherwise everything within an animal. And what that means, the ramification of that is very, I think it's quite an unusual case, is that if the animal has a fetus inside of it, right, a small, a calf inside of that cow, then that calf does not require shechita, right? That calf is kosher because, in a sense, it was because the mother was shechted. Now, what I think we're saying is, in a sense, the opposite of that, where you have the where you have the animal being shechted. So you have the animal shechted, but part of the amniotic sac had already gone out, right? Because part of it had gone out, right? Therefore, the fetus is not considered. Therefore, the fetus is not considered to be inside. It is ruba harinu nechshav ki yulod ve'ina nitar v'shchizas aim harishain mikdas. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay. You can still shecht it. Yeah. But the point is, the point is that you cannot assume that that fetus was inside, or at least that most of it was not inside, right? Because part of it comes out, we assume that most of it came out, and therefore it doesn't follow this same principle. The truth is, it has very little ramification in practical halacha. Partly because, well, I said from my perspective, mostly because we don't do this sort of stuff. We just go and, you know, whatever has been certified. And I imagine they don't do many shechitas of animals, of pregnant animals at the moment. But the real practical reason doesn't make any difference is that midrabanan, you can't eat that animal anyway, right? Midrabanan, you can't eat the animal anyway, because otherwise you end up in all sorts of confusion. This animal was shechted, this one wasn't. Yeah, but it's okay because it was, because it was mother was shechted while it was inside, etc. So for that reason. As I said, even though on a Torah level, the shechita of the mother works for the fetus that is inside, from a rabbinic perspective, it doesn't work. But what it does mean is as follows, that because the Mishnah has presented to us that the shechita of the mother does not cover this animal which has partly come out, what we see from there is that because it had partly come out, we're going to assume, in a sense, that it has all come out, and therefore it's going to be forbidden to eat. Simon Vlad Beisha, Simon Vlad Behemah. Again, the same principles are going to be applied. Imimas Nisin, the Gemara wants to know, if we're learning that from this Mishnah, right? If this Mishnah, in a sense, is the source, so Hava Amina might have thought, the Yesh Miktas Shilya below Vlad, Ugezera Miktasa Otu Kula. That you might have thought that the Gemara is telling us, or sorry, the Mishnah is telling us that you can have, thought that you could suggest that partial, the amniotic sac coming partly out could, in a sense, be empty, right? Not have the vlad inside, would not have the fetus inside, and in a sense, it just gezeira miktsasa atu kula, i.e. we're setting a sort of a boundary and saying that part of it is, in a sense, going to be just like all of it. In a sense, you can't just say part of it is it's forbidden to eat, and therefore we're not sure which came out and which didn't, and therefore the entire animal is going to be forbidden to eat. Kamash malon, right? Never kamash malon is going back on that, right? That this principle does not apply. Ein miktas shilya below vlad, right? There's no such principle as ein miktas shilya below vlad, and therefore the prohibition to eat this animal, unless it's shechted, is not just a rabbinic principle. Rather, it is an actual sort of lack of clarity on a Torah level. And similarly, we have the same thing with regards to this, purity and impurity on day one. Okay, I think a bit difficult to give, but just let me try and, I guess, sum it up maybe one more time. When you have this amniotic sac, which is partly in and partly out, right? The Gemara is trying to decide whether that's, in a sense, we're pretty sure what it is. Miktasa, yesh miktasa shilya below vlad, right? But in a sense, we're pretty sure that that most of it doesn't look like it's come out, and therefore it's going to be okay. But rabbinically, we're going to prohibit it. That's suggestion number one. What the Gemara is saying from over here is that that's not the case. The Gemara is saying that we see from this Mishnah that it's not just a sort of, we're not sure, and therefore we're not going to apply it. Rather, the doubt in this, sometimes you can have rabbinic doubts and Torah doubts, I guess. Maybe I'll phrase it like that. It's almost like the, we sort of are simply not sure on the facts in front of us, and therefore we sort of apply a doubtful perspective. But what the Gemara seems to be saying is that we're taking it back a level. We're saying, no, fundamentally, yotza miktasa, when you have part of it coming out, we have to assume always, and I know I have to assume sounds like it's on a doubt, on a level of doubt, but it's sort of going a little beyond. There's a stronger sort of a doubt. It's almost like a Torah level doubt. Well, you can have the point is that whenever you have part of the amniotic sac coming out, we're going to assume that there is a fetus inside of there. And as I said, that's going to have ramifications in terms of an animal and whether the child requires shechita. And it's also going to have ramifications on human level with regards to the application of the levels of purity and impurity. Okay, I'll leave it there for now. And then I think the Gemara goes through all sorts of other sort of statements of Ullah in the name of Rabbi Elazar, and we'll pick up from there next time.